And welcome to the Net That Haul FPL matchups show for game week 30. I am Gabriel at FPL Lens, joined by Kieran, my good friend, mega massive super hauler. Kieran at FPL blue footed booby. Maybe
it's underscore discomfort now. No, it's FPL underscore discomfort. I probably should have put it in when I logged in, but yeah, switched it.
FPL underscore discomfort is in the house. And it's a very fitting name for those of you that don't know Kieran. Kieran is away unto himself. So it's not a comfortable ride, but it will be an interesting one. We're going to dive right into the game week 30 because there isn't much time to consume this before the deadline. I guess we are about, 15 hours from the deadline or 16 hours, something like that. So we're going to get this right out into the airwaves. We'll say hi to some people in the chat. Look, Nima's in there and BW Splitta, who has a question from the Discord, which we will get to. Splitta, thank you so much. I want to actually just start the show with this lovely message from Harry Not Kane. He comes in here early to tell us, never got a chance to watch the show live, but love it so much. Thanks for the laughs. Thanks for the dedication and hard work you put into this. Really nice appreciation from Harry Not Kane there, and a great way to start the show as we head into the FPL philosophy. So the FPL philosophy for game week 30 comes to us from, quite fittingly, I think, Jean-Paul Sartre with his existentialist quote saying, "Life begins on the other side of despair." And I thought this quote was... I don't think I've used it this season. I've definitely used it in seasons past, and it's usually after a game week like the one we just had, where it's just comically horrific. I think it's interesting. Things are kind of coming together to me now. Kieran and I were having a conversation backstage before we started about how, like, in life we're not really in control. And I think game week 29 was a perfect example of that. And it coincided, no pun intended, with some life events in your life, Kieran, that taught you that same lesson. So on the other side of that despair, when everything goes wrong, all we can do is bounce back up. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think it's definitely a fitting one for game week 29, for everything. I think it's fundamentally we're all trying to sort of learn from mistakes, and that is the despair. So you're trying to look at the light at the end of the tunnel and sort of get through 29. It's happened no matter what people did. This is where hopefully despair goes out the window and a bit more happiness and excitement begins again.
Hopefully we don't come back in game week 31 and I have the same quote, because we had a game week 30 just like game week 29.
We've got slightly more fixtures and slightly better teams arguably playing this week.
That's true. The better teams hopefully will save us. I can think of some potential traps though that we will get right into. And of course, before we get into it, we do have to mention the new format. What's it called? Fantasy Challenge.
Yep.
Fantasy Challenge format. Yes. So I don't know about all of like the changing things weekly and different things. I guess that could be interesting, but I'm super excited about the new format. Just because we go over every fixture every single game week, right? And then there are players that you would never get on a permanent basis. You don't want a long-term relationship with. And just the non-committal of like a new roster every single week is it's perfect for me. It's perfect for matchups. So I'm really looking forward to that. I did a draft. I'm not doing the gamesmanship thing. Like I don't know. I just want to pick the players. So I do have a draft on Twitter if you guys want to check that out. Have you done one? Do you have a draft? Are you doing that?
I have. I kind of went into it going, that's just a gimmick. And then exactly to your point, I think shows like yours and the ones where you've got so many options, and when you are going through that dilemma of who to transfer in, transfer out, knowing that you're going to pick the wrong one, it enables you to go for all three, all four of them. And I think the people I've seen that have been interested in it, you're kind of seeing similar teams, which then makes it interesting because it might be that template of a Fulham, Chelsea defence because they've got the good fixtures. But if you just go to any top scoring week in FPL, that's not the teams that score the most points. So I think it is part of that funnel of like, sure, Salah, great option, but why not go Luis Diaz on the challenge or all of those alternates at those same teams and go for a bit more fun. So, for example, I've decided to throw Kivior into my team because you've got to be crazy to go for an Arsenal defender. And if you do, you're not going Kivior.
Yeah, that is an interesting perspective, and I guess I think this week in particular that just the fixtures kind of line up in a very template way, but I don't think it'll be that way every game week, and the like the unique element the twist this week of unlimited budget, I don't know how relevant that is given that City and Arsenal play, right? So I think that's less of a factor. I love the Diaz shout. I really do, but my midfield is pretty much set. I could consider Diaz over Son, and that might sound crazy, but we're going to get to the reasons why when we get to those fixtures, and we'll talk about what their individual situations are so we can kind of like pick it apart. Let's get started. Look at that. 6.5 minutes in, getting started with Newcastle hosting West Ham. Newcastle 2.25 net XG, West Ham 1.61. Looking at the data here, Newcastle's chance creation, so the zonals are popping for the zonal chances are popping specifically on the left, which is, I mean, but 4.8 on the left, 4.3 down the center and right. So I don't think there's that much of a differentiation there to say that one side will be favored over another. But then moving to the maps, we have for Newcastle, it looks like the expected threat map is bright red on the right flank, and then a medium red on the left flank. And then the XG map for Newcastle is in the center. It's like a medium red and then a light red on the left. The way I kind of read these maps are like, I'm still learning to read these maps. But what I'm doing lately is I want the XT map and the XG map to align. So the areas where they align the most, that's where I'll give kind of like a preference in terms of attacking output. And then West Ham, zonals don't look really good. There is a chance, though, for Bowen on that right-hand side attacking the Burn-Lascelles partnership. I think Bowen could get something here. Was a strong consideration for me in that challenge team that I made. How do you see this one?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think I like the point that you just made there in terms of looking for the XC and XG graphs to overlap, because it does seem as if it's that sort of West Ham right is the only similar one, if I'm reading them correctly, which then would align with a Gordon. And I think he is an interesting player to me. Watching him for England, and yes, they were friendlies, but he's just so dynamic, so attacking. And he is that type of FPL asset that's just so focused on heading towards the goal. And in a West Ham team that looks like it's quite vulnerable on that side, he does look like a good option. Bowen's one for me where Bowen's either highly involved in a game or you just don't see too much from him, where he's popping up or he drops deeper in it. And it's kind of interesting. And I think Newcastle are odd team because possession wise they tend to have lower possession but are pretty good in terms of how they it's hard to sort of put a pinpoint on it, but they don't have as much possession as they did last season. They're less in control of it, but it then makes them more exciting on that counter-attack because they almost lull teams into that sense of security of pushing more players further forward and then being able to exploit that space when they do regain possession.
I see your point with Bowen, and the problem is West Ham, right? I mean, West Ham could be completely dysfunctional, or Paqueta could be pinging direct balls to Bowen, who's in space, like, and Newcastle would be susceptible to that. But that kind of like doubt, I think would, I mean, if you have Bowen, I think you start him and you're quite happy about the matchup. Bowen wouldn't be somebody that I'd be bringing in precisely because of those inconsistencies with the team itself. I think, but Gordon's one of my favorite assets this week. I think he's a legitimate captain shout. I think he's maybe fourth best for captaincy. Nailed in a midfield, top transfer target, depending on what your team looks like. If you did sell him, I've held him throughout since like game week 4. So I love owning him as an asset. Like you said, just super attacking and in different ways. He can be direct and go around the outside. He can cut inside, right? Go across the box. He can plant himself in the box and does so many different things, and he wins pens. So I do like that, and I can see Gordon creating for Isak. I like Isak a lot here. I think he'll definitely get something at home.
It's an interesting one as well, isn't it? Because we know Gordon does well at home. You know, we sort of see the stats where he does look like one of those players that gets more attacking returns at home. Sort of, he's a Newcastle fan, so it's almost that excitement of playing in front of those fans and giving that extra maybe psychological push in those games. Isak, he's another one where I just think, for me, again, you're looking at fixtures moving forward and definitely a good game for him. So I think in things like challenge, definitely in my consideration. But my overall concern right now with sort of, what, 8 free transfers left, less if you've got a free hit or wild cards left, bringing in players that are vulnerable to injuries just seems quite risky at this stage. I guess the biggest dilemma I'm having is I have both of those goalkeepers, and I think a lot of other people do. So it's almost that dilemma of, do you actually get any win by going for either one of them, or is this just one of those games where you're expecting both to concede and you're almost just picking your poison?
I think whether West Ham score or not is completely random. It just depends if they can connect the lines or not. But I agree with you. Isak is one of the, I'm in a 3-5-2 in my challenge team. And Isak is one of the two up front. So I like him here. And I think it's a great point. Long-term, probably not a good investment. Or not that he's not a good investment. Probably a risky investment. Especially given the other options. My front three is Holland, Tony, and Muniz. So I'm good with that for a while. I'm not making changes to my front three for a little while. For at least a few game weeks. What's your front three?
What is my front three? It's Solanke, Fofana and Tony. So indications that I didn't free hit last week, and I'm dead ending into 34 essentially. So and I think that's what the exciting part of this stage of the season is. There's so many different strategies that people are doing that every transfer is difficult to compare and get opinions on, because it's going to be so, the old cliche, but it is so team dependent, more so now than any other moment, because some people need them to play X game weeks or into certain periods. And yeah, it's definitely one of the more exciting periods of time in the season.
Yeah, I agree. When the more it is team dependent, it means that there's more differentiation, which is fun, because like when you talk to somebody, it's like a different exploration. Like most people are going like small at the back right now, and you're like, I'm going small up top. So which is cool. All right, we're gonna move on to the next fixture here, but before we do, we'll say hi to some people. We already said hi to Harry Not Kane. Nima's in the house, stopping by to say hi. BW Splitter, we said. Evening, guys, from Claire FPL, Combe, Fulham, Buglers here as well. Sokan One in the house. JS is joining us as well. Podna is here for his Man United. I don't know what to call it, but. But we might be nice to Man United this week. Who knows? Who knows? Oh, we got FPL Soccer Crazy here. Nice quack quack from our good friend Duck. And look at this. Mr. Señor Nicolás Khan coming in from Cartagena, Colombia. Cartagena always reminds me of the movie Romancing the Stone. So watch out for the alligators, Nick. And I guess I'm dating myself by mentioning that movie. Algo Wapo comes in and says, what's your ranks? Algo Wapo, I am not checking my rank this season. Kieran, do you want to share your rank or no?
I'm on here to sort of show that anyone can make it onto a YouTube show from time to time. No, I think I'm sitting around 1 million, so similar to yourself. Disaster start of the season and ignoring Ollie Watkins for a vast majority of it. But that's the more exciting stage of where can you finish now? And particularly with chips still in hand, it's more fun this way. He says, rather than being ahead.
The where can you finish now game is in full effect here for us. And that's always more fun because it's the last game. It's the last game we play is where can you finish now? So it's going to be fun. Let's move on. 15 minutes into the show, Bournemouth hosting Everton. Bournemouth 1.73 net XG, Everton 1.31. Bournemouth zonal chances kind of lighting up on the left and center with 4.5 and 4.7. 4.0 on the right, so not so bad. And that's why you see like the strong zonal chances kind of are boosting the CRXG metric there at 1.95 and kind of elevating Bournemouth above Everton here. Let's see some stats that I wrote down here. Bournemouth have created the joint most chances from center in the last six home matches, which I thought was really interesting. Can you guess the other? There's one other team. Can you guess who it is? Who they're joint with?
Center.
It's obvious.
It's obvious. Spurs.
Let me double check before. Center at home. Chances created. Center. Yeah. Here. Yes. It's not Spurs.
Oh, at home is Arsenal then.
City. So City and Bournemouth have created 33 chances from the center in the last six home games. So obviously that's encouraging, but I have to say, like when we go to the XT map and the XG map, but I'll start with the XT map, Bournemouth's flanks are lighting up. And when we look at Everton and we think of the two center backs, Tarkowski and Branthwaite, and then we have the two center mids, Idrissa Gueye and who would it be next to him? Onana, right?
It should be, yeah.
That block of four is for Everton is quite strong. So while there may be chances created from that area, I see kind of like the goal involvement being in the wide areas for Bournemouth. So again, I'm going to go back to that Semenyo well and kind of tout him a little bit here. And then for Everton it's a little bit different. I mentioned Onana maybe getting forward, profiting from like the central chance creation for Everton 3.4 compared to 2.3 and 2.7 from the flanks. But I kind of don't like Everton here. I think Bournemouth's wing play, especially on the right hand side, can really take care of Everton. And I don't know if Garner or Harrison will be playing on the right to profit from that XG map, that kind of light pink there for Everton on that side. We don't have to spend too much time here. I don't know. Do you have any of these players?
So I've got Solanke, and actually it's an interesting one. I was on a space yesterday and people were sort of discussing, can Semenyo cover Solanke? And I was sort of keen to see this. But whilst I was waiting for this show and your stuff to come out, I went back through Everton's last few games, and actually, if you go back through them, they don't concede on the flanks. So obviously, sort of, I'm saying obviously, Man United was two penalties, so we can whatever on that. The West Ham game was a Zuma goal from a corner, a Suchet goal from a set piece, and another goal for Alvarez, I think, centrally. Against Brighton, it was a gross cross to dunk for a header off of the back of a set piece. And the only winger to get an attacking goal against them is Jordan Ayew at Crystal Palace in the last eight games. So it's kind of an interesting one where it seems as if that set pieces may be the way against them or where they're vulnerable. Maybe not from that first original set piece, but it's that aftermath where you do have players like a Suchek, etc., still hanging around and some of those taller players. So yeah, it was an interesting one when I saw your preview come up, and I think how one team may be conceding doesn't necessarily mean that coincides with how another team might be able to exploit them, because of course teams play differently. But it just surprised me when I was going through those goal scorers and even who'd assist them. I'm watching a few of it back on YouTube, that it seems like actually in the normal game state, Everton are pretty solid defensively. It's just in and around the set piece and as the game breaks down.
That's really interesting. I'm just bringing up their fixtures here. Let's see. Yeah, the Man United game, the West Ham game you mentioned. You talked about that. The Brighton game, Brighton got a red card. Not sure how much we can go with that. Then the Palace game where IU scored from the wing. The City game, again, like City, they're just going to do what, like, it's too much of a mismatch. So they're going to kind of do what they want to do. And everything gets funneled to Haaland anyway. So, you know, whatever, Haaland scores. He scored a brace in that game.
Yeah.
So it's going to be like just naturally from the center because of the opponent.
It's the same two Richarlison's playing centrally in that game against them. And actually the Brighton game, that red card for Brighton was in the 81st minute when they were still 1-0 down and went on to equalize in the 90th as well.
Fair point. Right, that was the Jimenez red card.
It was the.
Hang on, had it open oh no, no, sorry, Brighton. Brighton. I was looking at the wrong one.
Gilmore straight right, red Gilmore. Card in the 81st minute, yeah. And then it's on goal in the 5 second.
So how are you feeling about Solanke then in this one after seeing like look at the data, look at the blue XT and XG down the center for Everton.
It almost feels like a 0-0 to me now. And Everton are the kind of team that can manage those kind of results, right? Where totally. It can be a 1-1 and 0-0, and it could be anyone. And it could be Zabani with his second career goal now and third career shot on target, for example. Like, it just, I don't know would be the answer in this game. It also wouldn't surprise me if this is one of those games where if we were looking at Bournemouth players and how they typically line up, it could well be sort of a central midfielder that no one's ever going for that could do well in it. So it's just one where I'm going to be starting Solanke. And I guess if I personally had Solanke and Semenyo and could only start one, I think I'd be leaning more towards Solanke just from set piece vulnerability potentially.
Pens
as well. But I think obviously your stuff all shows it. Semenyo is probably better, although it's still not lighting anything up, is it necessarily?
And I mean, you know, the show that Semenyo may have more of an opportunity, but it hasn't been playing out that way, like you said. So the underlying data point one way, the results pointing another way. Like you said, I think it's just throw your hands up and say, well, it's subject to variance. Match highly subject to variance. And a 0-0, actually, I wouldn't be surprised by a 0-0 as well. Okay, let's move on to the next one. This will be one that interests almost everybody. Chelsea versus Burnley, at least from an FPL perspective. Chelsea, 2.00 net XG. Burnley, 1.18. Let's see. XT and XG zonal alignment for Chelsea unsurprisingly indicates Palmer, right? We look at Chelsea's right-hand side for the XT, kind of like that middle red, and then the right and center is a light pink for Chelsea in the XG map. So, I mean, well, Chelsea can be basically, Chelsea's attack can basically be equated to Palmer, but I have to say, I like Nicolas Jackson here in this one, and he's my other forward in my challenge team. I just think he will get the volume of opportunities he needs to secure some kind of production. I think he'll get in behind Burnley's mid block. So I love both of those. And one of my transfers this week, I already did my transfers, and one of them was Estupiñán to Malo Gusto for the run-in. How do you see this one?
Yeah, I think I'd agree with you. I think Jackson does look exciting for this game, and he still is ranking very highly for non-pen XG. And whilst he may not be the best finisher in the world, he is going to have a lot of chances. And that volume of chances should hopefully pay off in attack and return. So I think it definitely a good fixture for them. I think sort of the net XG that you've got up there for Burnley as well is interesting, right? Because we know that Fofana can't play. So it kind of then is that aspect of, well, then who scores for them in these kind of situations? And it'd be interesting with the involvement he has for Burnley since they've started playing him regularly, that now with this being on loan from your parent club, what's their actual XG with if you removed him from the picture? because you don't really have any exciting replacements in there for them. That's why they bought him on loan. So I know you put sort of Odegaard's movement there, and he could be one of those, but he still needs someone up top to kind of work with. So I think someone like Gusto could be great this week. He's attacking. I think this is one of those games where you can definitely see a more likely clean sheet than some of the other games coming up, and particularly for a team at home.
Yeah, in my challenge team, I have Petrovic and Gusto. So I am kind of banking on it. And it also wouldn't surprise me if, say, Lyle Foster is occupying the center backs and Odegaard's movements kind of confuse Chelsea. And their back line has been somewhat disconnected to their midfield line. So that's why I think Odegaard could get something here. But if you're betting on, I mean, it's tough to bet on clean sheets these days. But this would be one of them, a team at home against a promoted team, surely. So there are some questions coming in. I am starring those questions. Got you, K9. You got some situations here. We will get to them at the end of the show. While I'm here and while we're pausing kind of between matchups, do if you're getting something out of this show, smash that like for us. Help us get seen, noticed, and just help us get more people to like us. That's really what we all want in life, right? We want nice, loving community. So not much more to add from me here. Which Chelsea players in your challenge team?
I guess this is where I'm trying to not do what everyone else will have. I think Palmer's going to be highly owned in this, and I think actually in FPL, great captaincy shout this week, as you sort of laid out there. I think he's just decent and involved in everything Chelsea do. So therefore I'm going to go with Mudryk. Just because if he doesn't start, I'll switch him out with someone else. But it's one of those where, again, I'm thinking only one person wins each week in this FPL challenge thing. And if 300 people have the same team, then it's whoever clicks save first. Why not go with those kind of alternates? So, yeah, at the moment, it's kind of looking at Mudryk from an attacking perspective. I do have Jackson in it as well. So similar to you, I've got Jackson and Isak as a sort of two of mine. And then I think I've got my defence still has a couple of Chelsea in there and kind of a few variables. So I think it's Gusto and Petrovic as well, but then deciding whether it'll be a Petrovic or maybe a Leno as to who you actually start.
I have Leno on the bench, yeah. So there's another question coming in. Yeah, keep those questions coming. Thank you for them. Thanks for joining us. About 27 and a half minutes in, getting to the next matchup, Nottingham Forest versus Crystal Palace. Forest 1.73 net XG, Crystal Palace 1.25. None of the zonals really pop, everything like under three, except maybe the right side for each of them, 3.7 for Palace and 3.4 for Forest. And then the maps are kind of like it's a sea of blue, isn't it? And nothing really lines up. Palace have maybe something on the right-hand side. Who knows who's going to play on that right-hand side? Will it be Elise? Will it be will Ayu move over there? I don't know. Maybe Forest something on the right hand side as well. So I don't know. The stats are a little. I feel like the stats don't tell us much. So just like looking, some other stats that I noted here. Crystal Palace have conceded the joint most big chances in the last six away. They've conceded 28, and they have the third highest expected goals conceded on penalty, conceding almost two. I think Glasner has changed things a little bit. So I think that the data from Palace could be misleading here. I think Elise has to start, but if I'm Palace, I mean it's only Eze, but I'm not looking for anybody here. Maybe in the challenge. I thought I had mentioned Elanga here, but maybe I kind of do like Elanga in this fixture for kind of like a challenge team if someone's up for it. What do you think?
Yeah, it's another one with the new manager in place at Crystal Palace. It's such an unknown, isn't it? In terms of I have my eye on someone like a Munoz who fits well into a plan for me personally moving forward, but not necessarily rushing to bring him in for this game. Purely because I just don't know what's going to happen in it. I think what I found interesting is in blank game week 29, they actually had a friendly against Bodo Glimt ahead of the Norwegian season kicking off. And the first 45 minutes was essentially the starting 11 for Crystal Palace. So he kind of used it as an opportunity as a new manager to still play them all, where it was a back five of Mitchell, Richards, Anderson, Ward and Munoz. Midfield three of Amada, Lerma and Wharton. So a couple of different people in there. But then played a front two of Eze alongside Mateta, which is interesting. Now, I wasn't sure why that necessarily was, because in the second half, he did bring on people like Jordan Ayew, etc. So it's not as if they were missing. So it would just be interesting. I think Palace are one of those teams I'm keen to just watch how they develop, because if he does start moving towards playing SA more progressive or just behind that striker, he definitely is a player I'm going to be keeping an eye on. I'm keeping an eye on him anyway, because he's just a great option. It'll be interesting to see if he is playing out more progressive or if this was just a friendly try whatever you want type of situation.
Yeah, this, it's actually a good opportunity for me to mention the hauler that does all these maps for us, the expected threat conceded or expected threat and expected goals maps here. It's at Draft Alchemy on Twitter, and he's done some really nice graphics for predicted 11s. It's still a work in progress, but I'm gonna try to find Palace's here to see. Oh no, this is just an update from him. I'm not gonna look it up right now, but it will be interesting to see who how they start. I don't know how you sit. Like if you play a front two, then you can't. What was it a 4-4-2?
It was a 3-5. Kind of a 3-5-2, it looks like he set it up. With Mitchell and Munoz wide, and then sort of that midfield three, which is interesting. I think looking at Draft Alchemy's lineup that he's gone for, it is more of that 3-4-3 type of thing, with Munoz and Mitchell up slightly wider alongside Lerma and Wharton with three at the back, and then Eze and Ayew up wide behind Mateta, which makes sense. Right. That would be the more logical approach. Because I'm not sure who sort of, maybe I was dealing with an injury and it was just no point doing it, right? It's an international break, it was a friendly, there's no point reading anything into it in particular. But again, as someone who, I don't think Palace are necessarily a team you've got to rush into. I think if you are going through dilemmas right now of looking for that defensive option to just kind of take you through, maybe if you were dead-ended in a 34, then yes, you're probably looking at that toss-up between an 8 Nuri and a Munoz. And I know we'll obviously come into Wolves a bit later, but I think on the base of both these fixtures, there's nothing to kind of sway you into one or the other. And from an attacking perspective, I wouldn't be rushing into any of the players. I think we can sit back and just watch Palace for another week or two.
Yeah, and here's where I think Munoz is a great pick. He's from what I've seen. I think returns will come for him, but when we're looking at the fixtures, right, we have and you're comparing to 8 Nuri, I think Wolves are a better team than Palace, and I think 8 Nuri, they have I'm bringing 8 Nuri in probably for next game week. They play their away to Burnley next game week, then they host West Ham, whereas Palace, not as good a team. They have Man City in 32, and they're away to Bournemouth next week. So bringing Munoz in now, you're probably going to bench him the next 2 weeks. So probably not the direction I would go immediately, but definitely one for the run-in. I do like him going forward. We'll keep it moving here. Another one people will be interested in, Tottenham versus Luton Town. Spurs 2.34 net XG, Luton 1.65. So it does kind of see a goal for Luton. It sees a goal. I mean, the metrics see a goal for everybody, to be perfectly honest. But yeah, so the one thing I always start with when discussing a team facing Luton, and I wrote it here, it's a weekly mantra. It's the threat comes from players who move between the lines, and Madison is just an absolute standout here. Absolutely nailed in my challenge team. He's not going anywhere. And it's one of those players that I don't want him in my FPL team yet. You know, Spurs are going to blank. Sure, they double after that, but I'm happy to have Madison in a weekly format. And then let's get to like the question on everyone's mind, and the reason I'll throw a little shade on Son is, I mean, Son playing and this happened when Luton hosted Spurs and Son was playing centrally. It wasn't easy for him, right? I think there was a red card in that game. Is that the one? Bissouma got, maybe not, but Son didn't have an easy time at Luton playing centrally, and I think the wide areas is where Luton, and it's proven there, it's shown in the XG map, the deep red is for Tottenham's left, and then the deep red for the XG against Luton is also Tottenham's left. Those two aligning, and they're like unmistakable, and it's every week. It's not the central, you don't want the center forward against Luton. You want the wide players coming in. It happened with Semenyo. It's happened time again. So Son has a massive ceiling, and he's a top captaincy shout if playing on the left. The fact that he might be starting at the nine is why I don't even have my vice captain on Son. My vice captain is on Palmer, and my captain's on Salah. How are you viewing this match and Son in particular?
Yeah, I'm again quite grateful that my strategies put me in a position where this week my actual FPL team has Madison and Son both in it, which is quite a nice position to be in for the reasons you laid out. And I tend to agree. I think Luton are one of my favourite teams to watch whenever they play anybody, because it's almost as if as soon as they concede or even let in the second, they go, well, we've got nothing to lose, and go all out attack. You know, we've seen it against City when they were 3-0 up and Luton come flying back. And this isn't what's meant to happen. When you concede two goals, that's meant to be it. And I think they are one of those teams where they'll relish this opportunity. And if they do concede early to Spurs, it won't really set them back. I do expect them to just continue to attack Spurs. And whilst they might not necessarily get the breakthrough, I think they can. And to go back to the point you made earlier, yes, it was sort of that Bissouma red card game in the 1-0 win last time for them, and it was a Van de Ven goal from a Madison assist. So yeah, I think it is that opportunity between the space. It's one of those games I'm looking forward to watch, but I get the logic of this game probably is expected to have more goals than a lot of the other games in terms of for a particular team like Spurs. So logic is go with the attacking player for the team that's predicted to score the most amount of goals in the game week as your captain. But anyone from Spurs could get those goals. They do just have that ability to spread it around. And I personally still think Son is one of the best finishers in the league, but therefore is probably, it sounds wrong to say, but I enjoy seeing him with the ball and creating those chances outside of the box where he seems like he's more in his element than being more in that central position and restricted and being that outlay. So it'll be interesting because there are rumours that Richarlison might be fine to play, and we'll see what happens there. But I would agree that Son's not really in my mind personally for captaincy.
Yeah, Son feels the discomfort in the box sometimes when he has to stay in the box, so to speak. So and then do you have any defenders? Do you have any Spurs defenders?
No, none at the moment.
No, do you have any in challenge?
Yeah, in challenge, I think I've got Udogi in challenge. I think so it's just one of
Udogi over Porro.
Again, going with who I think will probably be least picked out of the two of them. So I don't think I necessarily need to go differential in every single one of these positions when I'm going through that dilemma, but also it's a 1-week challenge. So why not try it out week one in those kind of things? Looking at this, though, maybe I get that with Doughty's more attacking than Burke or whoever plays on the right for Luton in this game. So you would expect someone like Porro to be afforded more space to get in behind. But Udogi just seems to be more clinical when he's or decisive with the pass or with the final decision when he's further up the pitch. So whilst he might not have the same amount of opportunity to be that high up the pitch, he's a player that I think makes more of the right decisions more frequently.
I think recently Porro has even been held back and Udogi has been given a little bit more license to get forward and close to the box than Porro himself. And actually in this one, while it could work out that way, that Doughty is more advanced so Porro can get in behind him, Luton's attack, the chance creation from the right, is so weak that they could just hold Porro back to take care of Doughty, make sure they don't have that to deal with that threat, and send Udogi. Right. So I actually tactically like Udogi's in my challenge team as well. And tactically, I actually like him better than Porro here. But the fact that maybe Porro may be more highly owned is just an added benefit for me. And it wouldn't surprise me if Spurs concede.
And it's also better sort of, I don't know, Luton's left side seems stronger just in general, because you've got an Ogbene on the left compared to a Jacob Brown or Luke Berry or someone like that who they're still fantastic footballers, but I just think someone like an Ogbene is in that position so that if a Doughty goes forward, he is sort of better defensively. So yeah, I'm glad that actually the stats back it up more than me just going, well, let's go with the one that's less home situation as well.
Cool, let's move on. 40 minutes in, and we're moving into Aston Villa versus Wolves. This is a fascinating one for me. I'm really looking forward to watching this one just because of the tactical battle between Unai Emery and O'Neill. Aston Villa 1.71 net XG, Wolves 1.8. So pretty equal there across the board. Villa with a slightly better zonal chance creation, 3.8 down the center and 3.9 on the right. Which is interesting that the right light lights up for the chance creation for Villa. In terms of expected threat, the right side again, potentially Leon Bailey, that is like a medium to deep red. And then the XG, it's that central area that's deep red for Villa. And that's probably just like kind of balls into Watkins. So that's where the XG is going to come from. I think that's more a function of what Villa tried to do than it is of Wolves is any deficiency in Wolves. From Wolves' perspective, it doesn't seem to be as good as it is for Villa. Obviously, Villa at home are much stronger. But Wolves' left side is, I find, really interesting. And the reason being because is Cunha, the return of Cunha, who plays kind of in that left half space, I think he'll triangulate well with Ait Nouri getting forward. And I mean, Ait Nouri they'll be up against, I think probably Konsa will play that right back position. So I don't think they'll be too wide. I really do think they'll be in the half space, kind of targeting Longley. Longley is, I mean, replacement option at best. And I think he's a real weakness for Villa. So I think both teams get something here. If I were to guess, it would be kind of like a Cunha and Bailey kind of game. Maybe a Watkins, always maybe a Watkins. Every week maybe Watkins. But yeah, I can see kind of both of these teams trying to build play from the left. But obviously they can't both build from the left because that's the opposite. So they have to, it's like whoever wins the arm wrestling, the left arm wrestling, I think will exert some dominance in this one. What do you think?
It's an interesting one, isn't it? I like games like this, particularly because they're two decent teams. Not necessarily, like, Wolves are good. They're not fantastic. They're not bad. They are just an overall solid team. And having someone like Cunha, having a Sarabia who's more involved given the injury absences, etc., is just exciting. And I love it when it's derbies, local derbies as well, because I think things go out the window and it's anyone's game where it could, you know, I can see this being a two-all type of game and those kind of aspects. So again, another one I'm excited to watch, and yeah, it could well be the case as you've laid out that people like Bailey can attack on those sides, and it'll be interesting. Will it be one of those where the keeper gets it and they're chucking it out to their left-hand side and vice versa from every attack? Or
just see the heat maps just run around in circles
just the entire time. But yeah, I like derbies, particularly as they're later on in the season, and particularly ones that aren't as like permanent in their place. You know, yes, Wolves have been in the Premier League for a while now, but they haven't been one of those teams where a Wolves Villa derby is one that's been happening season after season, time after time. And when they do happen, anything, you know, in the last game there was a red card in it, so we can see a red card between those games. And those type of games are just fantastic to have attacking players in. So if I had a Watkins, I'm starting him. If I have a Bailey, I'm starting him. I have Doug Luiz, and I'm hoping for a feisty affair that will have a, you know, maybe a little penalty in there for him. So, yeah, another game that I'm expecting goals in for both teams.
And I think the goals will come late. I think it'll be cagey at first, precisely because of that kind of like tactical derby battle. I'll be thinking of you if the ball starts going like Martinez to Dean forward, they lose it. It goes to friggin' Zah to Eight Nuri forward, they lose it. And start going around. No, it's going to be great. It's going to be fun. And thank you for bringing my attention to the match that I guess a twitchy finger made me skip a match. And once I get back to it, yep, there it is. I guess I can be forgiven for skipping this one. Sheffield United hosting Fulham. Sorry, Colm, it's not about you or Fulham. You know that. Sheffield United 1.31 net XG. Fulham 2.03. So quite a high net XG for Fulham, given that that they're away. Chance creation, maybe the flanks, but I don't know. Close enough where I wouldn't pay too much attention to the zonal chance creation there. But the expected threat from Fulham, we see it from Fulham's flanks, right? The right is a deep red. The left is a lighter shade of deep red. And then comparing it to the XG map, it's the it's all blue, but the left and center zones for Fulham light up as a, not light up, I guess, are a lighter blue. But I see this game being about the flanks. Sheffield United will be in their back five, as they do. And William and Iwobi, I think, will boss this game from the flanks, kind of like a puppet. They'll be the puppeteers of this match from the flanks. But one thing, and I haven't really like pinpointed anything like this, especially for this player all season. But I kind of like Andres Pereira in front of that back three, with the two wingers kind of stretching the back five, and Andres Pereira just kind of doing some damage in front of the back three and a bit in behind the central midfielders. I don't know if you can get something. What do you think?
Yeah, this is. Yeah, I have the same opinion where I think both Wobi and William, they're both in my challenge team. I think anyone who's looked at any of my Twitter stuff knows my opinion on Sheffield United and where they're vulnerable, and it's out wide. Someone like an Andres Pereira, like Sheffield United are great at marking a striker who plays as a traditional striker. If it's a striker who drops deep and gets involved in the play, it's a different story. But for those that are just there, you know, if you have three centre-backs, it's kind of easy to mark them out of the game or limit them to lower opportunities. But at the same time, that then does create a lot of opportunity out wide. And more importantly, to someone like an Andres Pereira or other midfielders that are arriving late on the outskirts of the box that are freeing up that pass, because if you've got a couple of defenders looking at a Muniz, then that means that there is space for that late arriving midfielder who should be an Andres Pereira. So I really like him for this game week as well.
And then the other player that we haven't mentioned yet, and he's nailed in my challenge team, is Anthony Robinson. Sheffield United have been vulnerable in that half space, attacking Baldock in that half space. I just see him bombing, especially if the Fulham wingers can hold possession on the outside. Marco Silva will send Anthony Robinson running into the half space, so I think he could come out with an attacking return here to add to a clean sheet. So I really like him. I kind of wish I had him in my FPL team, but I'll be happy to play him in the challenge. Do you have him in your team?
Yeah, he was again one of the first players in my team for that reason, and another reason being Sheffield United are just so bad at home, aren't they? I think they've conceded 42 goals at home in 14 games compared to 32 in their away games. And they're both bad, but conceding 10 more goals in 14 games at home. And yes, we can look at fixtures and who they may have played, but they have been getting hammered 4 or 5-0 by teams that they shouldn't be losing 4 or 5-0 to. And it'll be interesting. I have a soft spot for Ben Brereton Diaz, just as a footballer and his style of play. But at the same time, he's not really started for Sheffield United. So he might be able to exploit Fulham as they attack, and maybe there is a bit of space in behind if he plays. But again, if we've got a Robinson attacking on the left, the space isn't going to be there for a Brereton Diaz on his left-hand side. So yeah, I tend to agree. Robinson's good for a draft. And maybe line up all three Fulham midfielders in your team instead of going three Spurs or something like that for a bit of differential in the challenge.
That would be fun. That really would. A comment and a question really quickly before we move on. BW split a Mooney's brace incoming. I don't see it. It's not the spot for him. I think he'll be an important player for Fulham in this one, but not the goal scorer. But hey, who knows? Sheffield United are so bad that Mooney's could get a brace.
Mooney's does move around a lot more than your traditional striker. Like, his heat map surprised me, and actually watching him, because I kind of see him as a mold of like a Mitrovic type of player mentally. But then when I watch him, that's massively undervaluing what he does. He is happy to drop deep and spread the ball out wide and be that late player arriving. You could see him, for example, switching roles on an attack with a Pereira who's more progressive based on the build-up. And he could be the one arriving late when the ball's been put out wide. So, yeah, it's Sheffield United. Totally. They're not a great team. I wouldn't put it past the Mooneys, just given how dynamic he is and the form he's in right now.
Yeah. And then a quick question, Tricky MF, do you feel any confidence in an Iwobi return? And, yeah, we mentioned that Kieran has him in his draft team or in his challenge team. And I think the wings will create. I see more chance creation rather than than goals from the wings. But yeah, I do see a return. All right, now we'll get back on track here with Brentford hosting Manchester United. Brentford 1.63 net XG. Manchester United with a surprisingly high net XG away with 2.01, which is really interesting. Kind of bolstered there on the EXPXG metric. We'll get to some of the specific stats in just a moment. The other thing Manchester United have going for them, and you can see it that reflected with the 2.05 CRXG metric, is the zonals, right? The zonal chance creation, 4.2 down the center and 3.9 on the right. So that right side, like if we look at the, just to move on to the maps here, expected threat map, deep red on the left for Manchester United, so Rashford's zone. Then kind of like a lighter or medium blue in the center, and then a lighter deep red on the right for Garnacho, and then the XG equal reds on the flanks for Manchester United. Now, I would forget about the left-hand side because of Rashford's form. He could come up with something, or he could do what he's been doing this season. We all know what his potential is, and the matchup lines up well for him, but I don't trust the player right now. So I gotta say, there's one player that the best player in this match for me. I think this is a match of the talisman. So Tony on the one side, kind of like taking advantage of two center backs who still show signs of deficiency, in my opinion. It doesn't kind of show up in the maps too much, a little bit there, the white and the XG map, but I think Tony can profit from that. And then on the other side for United, I think it's Bruno Fernandes. I think Bruno Fernandes can really, again, get in between the lines, Brentford in the back three, Bruno Fernandes moving between the flanks as well. I think those are the two to come away with returns here. And then a slight nod to Chaos Merchant Garnacho, I guess.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I think United away from home are different to United at home. They tend to keep it a lot more solid. The goals are a lot lower scoring overall, both for sort of how many they score, how many they concede. So it will come down to those talisman. And I own Tony. I think this is a good game for Tony. I think, as you said, Højlund could be doing well. He's looking better and better as the season's going on. And Garnacho just is chaos, isn't he? He's another one of those players who gets the ball and just is excited. As soon as he gets it, he's dynamic. He was interesting to watch earlier in the season because all the runs were there, but you'd watch United players and maybe it would be a Bruno and they wouldn't quite trust him yet. It would be default go left to Rashford because it's Marcus Rashford. And two defenders over there and Garnacho wide open, just going, I was here. But they clearly trust him now, and it just adds that extra component where if you do have an option of him there, then yes, if Rashford's going through a quiet patch, fine, we can utilise Garnacho, but at the same time, Marcus Rashford is still a great footballer and at any moment can kind of find that form again. And Brentford could well be a team with how the XT's matchups are that could kind of give him an opportunity to light it up again. Although Garnacho, Brentford will be out without Reguilón, won't they? So
yeah,
quite a nice lineup there, as you've said.
Yeah, exactly. Brentford will be playing probably a center mid at left back, and so here's unpopular opinion: Garnacho's not a good footballer. He's just chaos, and he production has come from that chaos this season. And Rashford is a good footballer, but he's not producing anything. So if you're getting more production from chaos than you are from quality, go with chaos for a little while, and then it might flip back. It can flip back at any moment with the when you're pedaling in chaos. But yeah, attacking the hole that's going to be left by Reguilón, I think will be interesting for Manchester United. And I see that as kind of like a draw type game with the two big influencers.
I think on that as well, one thing that I quite enjoyed stumbling across, I was looking into Man United away from home. United away from home and scored 10 goals in the first half and conceded 3. In the second half, they scored 8 goals and conceded 16. So it's almost as if they go 1-0 up and go, job's done. Job's done now. And no, it's not. 1-1. So yeah, it'll be an interesting one. It kind of plays into your point there where we could well have first half is Man United, second half is Brentford, and you've got a draw at the end of the game.
Yeah, yeah. And that could be Manchester United going to chaos in the first half. It's like, oh, shit, this thing's working. They go to chaos in the second half, and it's just chaos. And chaos comes back to bite you. So, yeah, who knows? There'll be an interesting study after the season. Who knows what to make of them? Hopefully, Podna is still around. I don't think we've insulted Manchester United too much. But in case we have, we'll move on to the next matchup. Liverpool hosting Brighton, one that many people will be excited about, despite Liverpool kind of struggling against Brighton recently. So let's kind of dig into the stats here. Liverpool an even 2 net XG, Brighton 1.2 chance creation for Liverpool. Again, it's all within a range, so I didn't favor any side, left, central, or right, as far as creating chances. I just think what Liverpool are going to do is they're going to come in. I mean, Brighton they're depleted. They're going to have a midfield of probably Gross and Gilmore, maybe Lallana in front of them. And that midfield three is going to face Endo, McAllister, and Szoboszlai. And I think Endo, McAllister, and Szoboszlai will just destroy them three. But I think they will destroy them and then get the balls wide, like right away into those pockets, isolating the maybe advanced defenders there. So I love Salah. You see it in the XT map there, the deep red, the best matchup in the maps there is Salah's area, and then it's backed up by a light shade of pink in the XG map. And even though it doesn't show in the stats, I really like Luis Diaz as well. I think, talk about chaos merchant. Once all the attention shifts to Salah after everything gets funneled, Diaz will destroy it. Like I think the last 60 minutes of the game, or the second half, or something like that. I think Diaz will create a lot of problems. I know you have Diaz in your challenge team. So tell me a little bit about how you see this one.
I tend to agree with you. I think this isn't as cut and dry as you've said as people are seeing. I think Zerbi's fantastic at just tactically. Just in general, setting a team up for different teams that he's facing and being able to try and maximise what they can do when they have possession. And I think his kind of tactic here is when they have possession, let's keep possession rather than let's try and do anything, which could frustrate Liverpool. But as you said, when you're looking at the sort of midfield matchup, you can try and frustrate, but there's just no matchup there. You would expect Endo, Szoboszlai and McAllister to regain possession pretty quickly there. Particularly with someone like Darwin just nipping at their toes as he pushes back eager to sort of regain it as well. So it'll be an interesting one. It wouldn't surprise me if Darwin did pick up his ninth yellow card in a game like this, just because I think it can be a frustrating one with how Brighton might approach it. And I personally, I've got Diaz at the moment in the challenge, but I'm kind of toying with McAllister just because he's looking more and more involved in everything Liverpool are doing. And like you said, whilst he'll spread the ball out wide, out of those three midfielders, he'll be the one trying to make himself available for sort of that return passing and around the box and sort of pushing into that box as well. And particularly as Brighton may overcompensate to the threat that Salah has and sort of push the centre-back over towards there, that then enables a McAllister or, as we were saying, sort of Diaz coming in at that back post. So again, it should be an exciting game. I think it in a prediction league I do with friends that we have to put in deadline in way in advance, I went 6-1 Liverpool, which there's no chance that's happening. But it is one of those games where it wouldn't surprise me if it was a sort of tight affair with Liverpool being frustrated for a lot of it and ending up winning 2-3-0. Or it was one that they just controlled comfortably throughout. And yeah, Salah's almost certainly going to be my captain this week off the base of it.
Yeah, so I'm right there with you. Com comes in with, he says he's decided to go Van Dijk rather than in his wildcard team. I'm assuming it's because Trent is due to return in a few games, weeks, I think, by game week 32 or 33. So I guess that makes sense. What do you think about Van Dijk as a pick on for a wild card? It's a lot of money to be spending when everyone's going cheap. What are your thoughts?
I'm fine with it. I think going there means that you're obviously not going for a Trent when the double comes around because you've kind of picked your poison there. But going Bradley means you're not going Trent either because making a move from one Liverpool player to another, like I just wouldn't go Bradley in general on a wild card for the reason we laid out of his position is not going to be secure. I like Van Dijk. I think every set piece that Liverpool have, he is the person that they target with that ball. And if you are getting a defender that's good in the air, that's going to be the target man on every single set piece, particularly when Trent returns into and is delivering those set pieces, you've got a great asset. And I think teams will be filled out with, you can compensate in other areas, can't you? I think if you're on a wild card, then what's his name? The 3.9 gentleman from Crystal Palace at the moment that plays week in, week out centre-back.
Richards.
Richards. There's options. If you wanted to go for a Van Dijk, then you bring in Richards as your fifth defender. And I think that's perfectly fine because you are getting that upside. And I think other people that maybe don't go for that Liverpool defender at all on their wild card will probably be trying to bring Trent in instead in 34, so allocating even more funds towards it.
Yeah, I don't have much to add. I totally agree with you. I think, you know, if wild card, just off the top of my head, if Van Dijk and Gabriel are your two, let's call them like expensive or premium defenders, and then the other three can be Gusto, Eight Nuri, and Munoz, right? Or even Chris Richards if you want. And you're still going, you're still getting the nice attacking cheap guys, but you also have the one you want in Van Dijk. So yeah, don't mind it at all, Colm. Just past the hour. If you haven't hit the like, please do smash it for us. If you're still here, it means you're probably getting something out of this. Hopefully we're not wasting your life. So give us a like for that. We're getting to the matchup of the game week. Manchester City hosting Arsenal. The final matchup here before we get to like an overview and we'll get to your questions and we'll thank the haulers and all of that. So please keep depositing the questions here in the chat. I will star them. I have the questions from Discord as well. If you want to drop a question in Discord, get your questions read first. Connect with Kieran offline, see how crazy he really is. Meet Hogan, Draft Alchemy on the back end, and Nima and everyone else. Hit subscribe. All right, Manchester City. This one, I thought it was fascinating right off the top here because the stats are so muted because these defenses don't give very much. Manchester City 1.33 net XG, Arsenal 1.5. It's right across the board. Arsenal with the kind of a robust expected data, which is kind of like taking them above Manchester City on the overall net XG. I'm just going to check the expected Arsenal's expected away data. And it's not even like that impressive. In the last six, they have about, well, it's fine. 10.24 XG non-penalty in the last six. So yeah, not great. I'm not sure why it's so high there. Manchester City have conceded recently, and we see kind of the areas where they concede. Arsenal's left lights up. I don't know who will play there. I know Martinelli is carrying an injury. If it's not him, Trossard maybe on that side with Havertz at the nine. But that left side for Arsenal does light up both times. So I expect the shots to come from there. But if you look at the zonal chances, the right lights up for Arsenal. So if we're following kind of that as a map, Arsenal creating chances from the, obviously the buildup is on the right, get the ball to Saka, get Odegaard involved, and then switch the point of attack, it seems to me, and get your chances from the left-hand side. And I could see that working against Manchester City. But in this one, I see kind of, this is kind of like the battle of possession. They're both going to want to maintain possession, kind of where the middle third meets the final third. And I think Arsenal is going to win that possession battle and force Manchester City to play a little more direct to Erling Haaland. But I think Manchester City's key player is Bernardo Silva in this one against the player that you mentioned, Kivior. I think Bernardo Silva tears Kivior apart in this one, and Manchester City get a couple goals, but maybe a draw.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, particularly as an Arsenal fan to look at it. I'll say this: this is the, I'm not going to say I'm positive, but it's the most positive I've been going to Etihad in a long time. Hopeful. Let's say hopeful. It's better than positive. I think there's other ways as well that we will look to exploit City with Martinelli. And I think what we'll look to see and what we saw a lot, and I'm hoping he's fit for this reason, but one of the key components we do is that Saka's side is to control the ball, control possession, as you laid out there. And the left-hand side is chaos, all-out attack, run at them and sort of have them on their back feet and create chances by defenders tripping over each other, play the ball into a Rice, into an Odegaard, into a Havertz and sort of receive it back again. And one of the ways that we were really good at doing it was from David Raya's hands. And he tried to do that with Martinelli out, and you just see that it's not the same because Trossard doesn't have that pace. So Trossard would get to the halfway line, but then be looking to play it sideways or backwards to then try and attack out on the right. So this could be one of those where, particularly with Kyle Walker injured, we'll see on Sunday if he actually is. But with him potentially out and John Stones, then you would say that Martinelli's matchup is better, because I know there's a lot of people who are City fans that maybe aren't fans of Kvaratskhelia, but I think he's fantastic, particularly for this matchup against someone like a Saka, where he'll do his job and keep an eye on him. And it will be more like an Odegaard who Arsenal are going to have to be utilising. And I know you put Declan Rice in there, where I think if we're going to get a result from it, then Declan Rice is going to be heavily involved at both sides of it. And it's going to be imperative that Jorginho continues that composure in sort of that more deep lying position of helping with the switch of, or the transitions, but also keeping that overall space and dropping into that sort of fifth centre-back role, or fifth defender role rather. So yeah, not sure what will happen. I guess, as I've heard a lot of people say, if Arsenal want to win the league, this is a must not lose situation. It's not a must win, it's just a must not lose type of situation. But at the end of the day, I'm still well expecting Manchester City to win the league, because I still think they're the best team in the league. And over a 38-game season, I'd expect them to still come out on top. So this could go anyway. I'm kind of hoping for a 0-0. The Arsenal fan in me is, you know, pretending it could be a 1-0. But you just never know. Mm-hmm. Games like this, you're just a force at home.
Yeah, and I do think, I like that point about Rice. What I wrote was, Arsenal want Rice to be in a position where he can be a playmaker, but not so far forward where he's not covering as well. And that's why that area where the middle third meets the final third, if he can stay in that area, I think that's the sweet spot for him, and they'll feel comfortable, and you guys will feel like you can be adventurous with that possession. I agree with you. I think you guys have a chance to win that kind of battle here. With your chaos control style. It's like, you know, a painter named Kandinsky? Do you know Kandinsky?
I don't.
So Kandinsky, he painted this painting. He has a bunch of stuff, but he painted this painting. It's a two-sided painting, and it's kind of like geometric shapes. And on the one side, it's like very controlled, the geometric shapes, like well-placed. And on the other side, it's more chaotic. If you type in Kandinsky chaos control, that's like, you guys are, Arsenal is a Kandinsky. You got control on one side and chaos on the other. And at the beginning of the season, they weren't balanced. It was too much control. and you needed that chaos, and the chaos has been brought in. And part of what brought that in was that Havertz-Trossard interchange.
Yeah.
The nine moving into midfield ignited the chaos on the left-hand side. So I'm impressed with that development and with how Arteta has kind of grown throughout the season.
And I think that was a huge component, right? Where at the start of the season, Odegaard was having our most shots per game. And I love Odegaard, but he should not be having the most shots per game in that Arsenal lineup. And it was indicative because that's when we had Havertz playing alongside him and Rice, and that just wasn't working. That it needed a Jorginho to come in to enable Rice to then progress into his role and Odegaard to then play the position that he plays best, that creator, that exploiter, that person that controls the ball when they get it, has time on it every time they have it, and will decide and dictate and almost orchestrate where it goes next. Although that's all well and said, but this is Manchester City. So they are one of those teams who, you know, as the old quotes go, it's all good until you get hit in the face. You can have a plan until you're hit in the face. And City are the kind of team who can hit you in the face in the first, second. Game plans, I wouldn't say go out the window, because I think this is a more mature Arsenal team. But I think this is a game where that battle for control in the centre of the pitch is going to be key, because I don't expect too many chances for either teams. I think it will be teams having possession and continually looking to find space by switching it side to side, playing it around, looking for those runners. And like you said, a Bernardo Silva looking to get in behind a Kivior through those kind of plays with the magic that Kevin De Bruyne possesses. But on a similar side, Arsenal looking to do the same with Odegaard kind of dictating that. So, yeah, I think one with low chances, I'm hoping that maybe the absence of a Stones and even a Walker could kind of tip the balance towards Arsenal from set pieces as well. Because we're looking good at set pieces, and they are two good defenders at set pieces. So you'd like to hope that if you're losing two of your core defenders, that you would be slightly weaker. But again, I'm not holding up massive hopes. I'm going to be watching it, not behind the sofa for a change, let's say, but with a lot of interest and a lot of passion, and hoping for Kudinski to take effect.
I love that point of the set pieces. That's something that I had overlooked. And yeah, with those absences, the way Arsenal have looked at set pieces recently, definitely there's potential there. And I think I love that you brought in, so this, everyone gets a treat this week. It's a second FPL philosophy, and this one comes to us from Tyson. That's who you're quoting. It's everyone has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. That is the philosopher Mike Tyson helping us out there. I'm starting Haaland. I'm not even thinking about captaining him. This match presents like starting dilemmas, I think, for people. It certainly does for me. I have Saka right now. I have, like, do I start Saka or Muniz, for example? And that's a crazy question.
It is, but you're literally going Saka versus his toughest opponents in the toughest environment, like the toughest opponents away from home, so the toughest fixture, or Muniz in against the worst team, who, yes, they're at home, but they're worse at home than they are away, so the worst home team. So it kind of offsets that, doesn't it, where you're not saying that Muniz is better than Saka, but you're going, but which of those teams, if you were right now to say which of those teams scores three goals this week, you're not saying Arsenal.
Right. So I have Saka and Gabriel on the bench. And now that you just mentioned the set piece thing, I'm looking at Gabriel on the bench. Is Arsenal going to win 1-0 and Gabriel comes out with like 13 points?
I'm signing him, but hey, I'm a fan. But it's those kind of games, right? This is where those halls come from, where you'd be mad to start a defender for either team. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, look, I appreciate Man City were missing Rodri and De Bruyne in particular in the return game, and they are massive in that Man City team. You can't sort of overlook that whatsoever. But they also didn't manage a shot on target and a shot after the 60th minute in that game. So it's not as if out of the two teams this season, who is more prone to a defensive lapse in concentration, you'd have to say City. mm-hmm. but still not frequent. Yeah. You say marginally, like they would have one lapse every 15 games or something, whereas Arsenal would be one over 60. Like it's marginal, but if you were to go between the two, so again, this could be a game where if anyone is going to score three goals, it's City in this game. But the likelihood of two or three goals in reality for either of those teams is unlikely. It's more likely than not that it's a one goal either way or for both teams or none whatsoever. So I'm going to be starting Gabriel just on that basis. And if I owned a Gvardiol, for example, then I'd probably be starting him as well. But I wouldn't be starting Saka. Not Haaland, but not Saka. But then I'd probably start Saka over Foden. So it's weird how the swings tend to go.
And going back to the just the idea of there is so much differentiation. It depends so much on who you have. But yeah, I mean my back three is Bradley, Gusto, and Porro. So Gabriel just doesn't make it.
Whereas my back three at the moment is Alex Moreno, Kieran Trippier, Kirkez, Gabriel, and Doughty. So maybe for a defensive player. There won't be because, hey, I'm not expecting anyone to necessarily pay off a hit this week and I need Salah first and foremost. But yeah. I can understand. Well, you can kind of see why Gabriel makes it into my team and not yours, because out of all of my five defenders, he's probably the only one that I think starts this week.
He's the first one in the starting 11 out of the ones you have. I agree.
Like Trippier, I'd like to think will start, but Moreno could be Digne. Kirkhead probably doesn't play. Doughty, God, no, not against Spurs. So it kind of is that progression where you go, well, Gabriel is my best defender this week, which is crazy. Away from Man City, he is my first defender in my team.
Oh, we might be reusing that quote after all there, Kieran. All right, cool. We'll get to the question shortly here. This is the overview, game week 30. Come check it out. I think we've covered everything pretty extensively. Is there anything maybe left over or something just here generally that stands out to you?
I guess the thing that jumps out more than I realise is that net XG for Newcastle being as high as it is compared to the other teams. For it coming in second, I think, behind Spurs. Definitely plays into the challenge because I don't think many people have Newcastle players anyway right now, apart from a Gordon. But I think that jumps out more than I was expecting.
And that is a good point. I mean, we have six teams with a net XG over two. Usually we might have one, maybe two, like a City and Liverpool or something like that, or Arsenal will jump in there, but never at the same time. That to have six over two is crazy. And for the lowest net XG to be 1.18, Burnley away to Chelsea, it really, like, to your point, clean sheets. We're not chasing clean sheets. Like, don't go chasing clean sheets. And I think that's kind of why the cheap attacking defenders are so popular right now, because there's been an acceptance that we're not going to be looking for clean sheets, and we don't have to spend that money for those premium players. So fair point. And Newcastle right in there. I'm so happy to own Gordon. I think he'll have a really good one here. Let's see what's next here. We'll do thank yous. Actually, before we go to the thank yous, we're going to do the questions. Hey, look who's joining us. If you guys haven't checked out FPL SideNet podcast, it's just two guys talking about a game within a game and having fun. And they have the best titles for their shows. People always do puns, and the puns are always the same. Their puns are good. So check them out, some guys. Thanks for dropping by. And we're all looking forward to Easter. I was going to say something else, but I'm going to be good. All right, let's see. Questions. First, we'll go to the Discord question. Thanks to Nima for dropping them in our chat. It makes it really easy. We just have two from Discord. First one, fellow Arsenal fan. You know him, Kieran. W Splitta, he said, I've seen a few people talk about free hit in 38, but no content creators discussing it in depth. Maybe I'm missing something, but isn't a huge advantage of doing this essentially gaining one free transfer over everyone else? Perhaps it is just common knowledge, and that's why no one is mentioning it. This is my first time playing. Essentially, gaining one free transfer just means avoiding playing the normal opportunity of... I'm not sure what the question is. Does he want us to discuss free hit in 38?
I think so. I think he's saying that you gain an extra transfer, but you wouldn't, because if you've got a free hit, you're transferless anyway, aren't you? You lose a transfer in the week you free hit anyway, regardless as to whether you play at 38, 37, whatever it may be. Right. So yeah, if he's asking the question about 38, I'm free hitting game week 38 again this season. I did it last season. I love it personally, because there's a few reasons behind it, but I guess the main one for me is it ends the season in a fun way. And after the torment we put ourselves through, hey, being able to pick anyone you want for the final game, why not? And I do think it gives that opportunity of probably the most insights of who's playing and who's not, and the opportunity to go different. I think for me personally, the reason why it jumps out is if you look at the teams who double in game week 37, a lot of them have good fixtures in 38, but you don't have any Arsenal or Liverpool players probably. And they both have great fixtures. Mm-hmm. And if the title's still on the line, you'd want them. So yeah, I'm someone who I wouldn't lose in other areas to solely be able to free hit in 38. I think things are set up for people to free hit in 34 or 37 with the way it is aligned. But if you're in a position where you can dead end into one of those and sort of wild card, then yes, you do have that free hit available for 38.
I like it a lot. It's not something I've ever done, and I kind of regret it. So I'll be keeping that in mind for the future. And I think just strategically, it's good too for the reasons you mentioned. Like you go for the players with motivation, and that makes it fun too, because you see them battling, and they're battling. It's almost like they're battling for you, which is great.
Well, that's it. I had triple Everton defense in 38 last year, and I kept a clean sheet. And it's just, why would you ever have triple Everton defence? You shouldn't. And similarly, was able to have Kane because of a few different things. But you'll tend to, in the environment we live in now, you'll probably have most of the team leaks out anyway. You'll know who's playing. And the way that I look at the free hit is the biggest difference between your team and the overall template. And that's what I like a free hit for, is where is the biggest amount that I can... not necessarily game, but be different to everyone else.
Cool. And then the other question was from Sebastian Koo. Better captain, Salah or Son? We're both on Salah. And I think we mentioned the, not concerns per se, but the potential areas of complication for Son if playing centrally the whole game. I guess that slight risk, I think, tilts it to Salah.
I think interesting one though. Would you then put, I guess if we throw into the mix Palmer and Gordon, where would you put them? Obviously behind Salah, I'd assume, but where would you put them in relation to a Son?
Ahead, both of them ahead of Son for me. For me, that the order would be Salah, Palmer, Gordon, Madison, maybe. Actually, maybe.
I like that. I do. I think that we've got. I think every thread you'll tend to see in every news will be Salah, Son, Palmer as the three. But yeah, I like Gordon and Madison as those outliers. I don't think many people will be brave enough to do it, because I think people from, if you own Salah, Son, Palmer, Gordon, and Madison, it'd be really hard to actually go without Salah, Son, and Palmer as your captain and get onto one of those ones. So I think it'd be a very unusual situation you find yourself in where you're going with a Madison or a Gordon, but I really like those as options.
Yep, cool. Quick hello, Andrew's dropping in to say hi. Andrew Deal, what's up, buddy? He's in Pennsylvania, good friend. Okay, getting to some of the questions here in the chat. I'm on wildcard, Semenyo or Solanke?
It's different on the wild card, isn't it, than compared to this game, I'd argue, where you want the guy on penalties that's playing centre forward if it was between the two of them. But it's also not that simple because they're completely different prices and you've got an extra $2 million by going one over the other. So it's what you then do with it. So it's impossible to answer in a vacuum. If we were looking at it in a vacuum of they're both equal at the same price, then I'd be going Solanke. But that's unfortunately not the world we live in when it comes to FPL.
Yeah, it depends on the impact on the rest of your wild card, your plans moving forward. If you know, for this week, I think I'd prefer Semenyo. I might prefer Muniz to both of them if you're on wild card. So
And that's what I was going to say. If you're looking at a 4.5 to 5 million range, you're probably looking at a Muniz or a Cunha before a Semenyo now, aren't you? Maybe Cunha is probably top of that list, arguably.
I would agree with that. Cunha top of that list. Hold on. Got a couple here. This is a long one. I haven't pre-read it, so I'm just going to hope for the best from FPL K9. Two free transfers. Game week 30, Bailey to Salah, roll the second free transfer. Okay, so far so good. Game week 31, Watkins to Haaland and Madison to Garnacho. That's one scenario. The other scenario, game week 30, Senesi to Gusto and Bailey to Salah. Bring Haaland in 32 with two free. Well, if you do both of those in 32 with two free transfers, which option is better? What do you think? Which one are you going for?
I guess the difference there is whether or not you have Garnacho or Gusto for 31 as well as having Gusto for this week. Gusto's good for this week, isn't he? I'm probably leaning more towards that second option out of the two of them. Garnacho is more of an enabler overall, but you can bring whoever you want in 32 with those two free transfers if you bring in Haaland in anyway.
The other thing I'll mention is I like Bailey this week, so I wouldn't want to sell Bailey to Salah when you can sell Senesi for Gusto. I want Bailey and Gusto this week and Salah, so the option two gives you those three. So I would go with that one.
Well, no, because option two is Bailey to Salah still, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it is. It is, isn't it? It's still Bailey to Salah. Damn it.
But I'm assuming if there's Madison in that team, there's probably Son in that team as well. So you're not getting rid of either of that Spurs boys. I don't know who else you have in there, K9, but I guess probably, as I mentioned beforehand, Gabe, and this hasn't really helped out, but I have to get Salah, and it's either Doug Luiz, Iwobi, or Elanga, and we like all three of them this week. So it's not nice to be in those positions when you're removing someone who arguably is quite good. But
I don't know. I think you can get rid of Doug Luiz. Darby. He's going to be so busy in midfield in an intense derby. Wolves have a strong central midfield that Luis is going to have to take care of.
And we do like...
He could get a pen.
Don't we? Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. And he could get a pen. I think that's what you're hanging your hat on with Douglas Luis.
And that is all you can really... It's also the fact that he's just a bonus point magnet, isn't he?
Yeah,
he doesn't even have to score to get max bonus in a game like this. I don't know. It'll be one of those where whoever I remove will be the wrong person. But I guess fundamentally, and it'll be the same for you, K9, you're bringing in Salah. Whoever you get rid of, Salah is better. He just is. Yeah. So you're not going to be happy with it. Like, the other person will potentially get an attack in return, but you've got Salah.
Yeah, fair. K9 has another question. Start Muniz or Solanke?
Muniz.
Oof.
I don't know, actually, because... No, I'm still Muniz. I just think Everton are better defensively.
I kind of agree. I think I'd start Muniz as well.
I don't think either necessarily get two attacking returns, but I'd say Muniz is more likely to get one or two type of situation.
And precisely because of the movement that you mentioned, where there's like an interchange potentially with Pereira, and he'll also peel out wide sometimes and be a target in the half space. So yeah, Muniz, and he's in good form. So Thingamabob says, ahoy, ahoy, just want to drop a question for later. Would you rather double Spurs fullback and Foden or double City defense and Madison from now until the end of the season? Wow, now till the end of the season.
It has to be the team that don't have Europe, right? In terms of having two defenders rather than Pep roulette with two defenders for 9 game weeks.
I don't think you can consider double City defense anytime. It's certainly not now. Let's just leave it at that. Yeah, so double Spurs and Foden, I guess. Tricky MF, would you do Watkins to Haaland for -4 this game week? Your matchups are throwing me off, keeping Watkins until 30. It's funny that my matchups are forcing him to keep Watkins when I haven't owned him in months. He's probably doing much better than I am, that's for sure. No, I wouldn't hit Haaland in this week. You're not going to say to hit Haaland in this week, are you?
I probably wouldn't do that move for free personally this week.
Right. So yeah. Not even for free. I agree.
For free maybe, but for a minus four, definitely not.
What about this one? Watkins to Darwin.
Right. How many games have Liverpool actually played? 28. So they've got 29, 30, 31, 32. So their next four games, he has to not get two yellow cards. Yeah, I'd back him to not get two yellow cards over four games. Yeah.
Yeah. Safe on that front.
If it's still for a minus four, which I'd assume it is following on from the last question, I wouldn't do it for a minus four. I'd do it for free, but not for a minus four.
I wouldn't do it for minus four, and I'm sure the people in the chat won't be surprised to hear that. I wouldn't do it for free.
Darwin plays Sheffield United instead. What if you got Darwin and 4 points? Would you consider it?
Yeah, maybe. If you gave me the 4 points, if we could reverse that. I mean, Sheffield United, I don't think is great for Darwin. I love it for everybody else, but not great for Darwin. That might even be a Gakpo game. I don't know. I don't think this one is a Gakpo game, but that one could be. Manchester United away, I kind of like that for Darwin. Palace at home. Palace are in a back five now. That back three, don't love it. Fulham away, yes. Everton, no. So it's like it's mixed for Darwin. And you don't know which ones he'll start and which ones he won't start. And he needs a lot of opportunities to get any points. So I would say no.
It's just a weird one, isn't it? Because Watkins is one of those players that you're looking to move out sooner or later, because he kind of goes good fixture, City, good fixture, Arsenal. So he kind of, but it's an attacking player. I'd hold on to Watkins probably to your point, because you would expect some rotation for Darwin and not the best fixtures necessarily. And again, you're expecting Villa to score against Wolves this week, and Watkins is just involved in everything. He's apparently a better player at assist than Ozil these days.
Yeah, speaking of Villa and Wolves, Tricky MF comes back with a question. How much does McGinn and Kamara absence versus Wolves degrade Bailey Watkins' prospect? Assuming Lina plays, Wolves appear to win the engine room battle. Yeah, that's what we were talking about, that engine room battle, and why I think Douglas Luiz will be relied on that much more to kind of like keep that engine going. It hurts him a lot. Kamara changes them completely. McGinn, whatever. I don't rate McGinn. I never have. So, but he is important to the team. He's I think it's a big deal for Villa, and it's what gives Wolves kind of like it's going to make this game really interesting. That absence in particular, I think. All right, we have a few more that have come in here. Boom, there's one. Evan Chowdhury. Morris to Muniz from minus four to bench Saka? No. Yes, but no.
It's just one of those that you just look back at yourself when you've had Saka on your bench and he gets a goal and go, why did I do that? And Muniz is blanked, right? It's those outcomes where can Muniz repay a minus four against Morris this week? Yeah, probably. But can he repay one against Saka? I wouldn't back that as much. And you kind of are saying that you're bringing in Muniz for a minus four for Saka. I know you're not directly, but that is the move you're making fundamentally. And I wouldn't do that.
Yeah. And so I wouldn't do that either. And I didn't do that a few game weeks ago when I didn't take a hit to take Doku out and bring Son in, because it would have meant benching Tony against you guys, against Arsenal. It's like, do I do a minus four to go Doku to Son to bench Tony? And I said no, and it destroyed me. I should have done it. So we're going to tell you no and trust your gut. Like, do not go with what we say if you're feeling something different. Always, of course, but especially in these situations, like, I got burned. I guess I'm a little bitter.
I guess the point I would say, yeah, I think exactly that. Do what your gut is saying, but also it depends on what your strategy in 34 is. Comes into play there as well. Because if you're... And also, let's not forget, Arsenal have Luton very soon. So if you're moving Saka out, then next week he's got Luton. So
it would be to bench Saka.
I'm skipping through my head here. Yeah, ignore all of that. Yeah, no, in that case, if you don't think Saka does well, if you think right now, if you were looking at that game and your analysis of it is Man City win comfortably and Arsenal don't score, then yes, do it.
Yeah, fair enough. Next one, Sarthak Mahindra. Walker to Gusto / Udogie or Richarlison to Sarabia? Walker to Gusto for me.
Yeah. But Richarlison could be playing. We don't know, but yeah.
Yeah. Thingamabob, for Luton home, Brighton away, is there any argument for Havertz, Odegaard, Martinelli over Saka, or do you just stick with the star boy? I'll give this one to you.
There's plenty of arguments for it. I'd probably give my strongest arguments to Odegaard just because he's the most nailed, regardless of anything. Havertz is up there for me, and I'd expect him to be involved in a lot of the games. But I do think as we have Champions League, a very tough fixture against Bayern Munich, he will be prioritised for the games where Arteta thinks he's going to be best utilised. And if he sees that Bayern Munich game, we do have Gabriel Jesus and Nketiah both fit and fighting. We've got Trossard who can play in that position. So if I were to go for any of them, for those particular games and be confident that my player is playing in those games, Odegaard is the only one that I would consider. The others I think you're fine with, and I think you could well across those three games get 180 to 230 odd minutes. But if you're thinking you're going to get sort of over almost 90 minutes across all three games, it's going to be tough for Havertz and Martinelli.
Fair enough. The good stuff. We're getting down to the end here. If you have any last minute questions, drop them in there. We'll do some quick fires. FPL SideNet podcast. Is the minutes risk by Raul Jimenez for Muniz real, or am I talking myself out of getting Muniz? Cheers, guys. Com comes in and answers this question. Thank you, Com. Fulham fan. SideNet, Muniz is the starter currently. Jimenez might take 10 minutes off of him every match. Going forward, Muniz is playing like a Mitrovic, but with pace. Love to hear that. And that'll do it. That's all the questions. We're both on Salah cap. I have Palmer vice cap. Not that it matters. And you have to make your transfers. You have to bring Salah in.
I do, and I'll probably have to. Well, I have to do it today because I've got a long drive down to the English coast tomorrow. So I'll forget about it if I don't do it today. So we'll see what we end up on. I'll definitely think about your suggestion on Doug Lewis. I'm still leaning towards Alanga for Salah, but we'll see.
Okay, fair enough. And then as we get out of here, we're going to say give some thank yous. So we're going to thank our haulers and super haulers, and thank you everybody in the chat. Good chat as always. Thank you, Kieran, for keeping me company. This was going to be a solo show, and I found Kieran hitchhiking, so I picked him up and made the show a whole lot better. So really appreciate that. So here we go. Super haulers, FPL Robbie, Greenback Golf, Harbor Boy, David Harrison, FPL Discomfort in the house, right? True and right in front of you. And True Fandela, our haulers, Dread FPL, FPL Craig, Padna Blonde, Escutter Zem, Tom Gorsuch, Tavinder Raj, Lindsay O, Connor Hunt, Akshay, FPL DG Boy 88, Claire FPL, Catherine A, Harry Not Kane, Benjamin Lockwood, Nick Khan, FPL Rubber Ducky, Big Mike, General Zod, FPL Planner, Brett M, Mark Bond, I think. Yep, Mark Bond, Kevin Rose, FPL Saffer, FPL Eric, FPL Teacher, Don FPL, Grady, Sebastian Koo, Neil, Inshallah Mo Salah, I think. Arag, Gaikwad, BW Splitta, Jaskaran Singh, and Tersex. Elron, Lucian again is the teacher, FPL California, Daddy Bot, and Patreon, Mike Burke, Dr. Green Thumb, Draft Alchemy, and Michael Rodriguez. Thank you all. Good luck this game week. It's not going to be worse than last game week, so just like set last game week as your expectation, and I guarantee you will have a smile on your face this weekend. Any last words, Kieran?
No, look, thanks a lot for having me on, Gabe. Really enjoyed this and actually being able to be involved as you go through this and get more insight. So thanks for having me on. And best of luck to everyone this game week.
Brilliant. And I'm gonna get you in our chat so you can come on some more shows, because this was a lot of fun. Really appreciate everybody. As always, peace.